Good morning. We'll convene the meeting of the Governance Committee. The first item on our agenda is approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Do I have a second? Anybody second the motion? I'll second the motion. All in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. It's unanimous. The next item is approval of the minutes of our meeting of September 27, 2012. Do I have a motion on approval of the minutes?
So moved.
And I'll second the motion. Is there any discussion of the minutes of September 27? Any amendments or comments? Hearing none, the vote will occur on the approval of the minutes. All in favor will vote aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. It's unanimous. We have four information items to take up today. The first one is an update on the upcoming board self-evaluation and the annual evaluation of the general manager, chief executive officer. I wanted the committee and the board to be aware that we will all be receiving in the next days questionnaires from our consultant, similar to the ones that we've seen before with respect to other positions. There'll be a period of time in which we'll be able to respond to those questionnaires. There'll be two separate ones. One is the board self-evaluation, and the other is the evaluation of the general manager. And that process is underway, and you'll be receiving those, I think, next week. Hopefully everyone will respond within the time frame, and we'll be on track to fulfill our responsibility with respect to those evaluations. Is there any question about that or any comment about that item before we move to the next information item, which is a discussion of the board officer nominations? As members of the committee are aware, we annually elect the officers of the board, the chair and the vice chairs, and the process is that this committee makes the nominations in December, and the election takes place in January, and the new officers take over their responsibilities immediately after that election in January. And I had asked the general counsel to prepare, and she did for us, a brief memo about the election of board officers, which everyone should have received, and there's a copy of it in your packet today, and simply wanted everyone to be aware that this is coming, and what the process is, and we can, if there are any questions or comments about that, now we can have a discussion. Otherwise, we'll have the committee meet to nominate candidates next month. Any questions? Any comments about that item?
A comment,
Mr. Downey.
This was one of the governance reforms that was suggested by outside parties and was adopted by this board as we move forward.
I think it's been positive.
Hopefully, we continue the premise that it is an election among all board members and not by rotation, and that has served us well, and we should try to fulfill that, whoever we might nominate.
That's correct. This is under the changes that we made under the leadership of Mrs. Hines over the last couple of years. We've made a lot of changes, this is part of that process. Any other discussion of that? Hearing none, we'll move to the next item on our agenda, which is a discussion of our strategic plan and procedures, and we're going to have a presentation from Barbara with respect to this item.
Okay. Good morning. So since the last time we talked and we reviewed the plan, we've made a lot of progress, and we've incorporated a lot of the great feedback that you gave us, and I outlined some of that in a recent update that I sent to all of you. But also I just put a little bit of more of a progress report together, and actually we got it all together the last couple of days because there were some really great meetings that happened just this week. So this morning what I'd like to talk to you about is sort of who we have talked to, who is yet to come. Also to discuss a little bit of what we're hearing in the meetings that we've had and some of the feedback that we're getting, and some of you have been there, so I expect that you might have some comments too. And then some of the major events yet that are coming up here in the next month and a half or so. So first of all, let's take a look at our progress in reaching out to our stakeholders. On those that we have talked to first, we've made a lot of progress. We have talked to probably over 500 people in various groups, elected officials, Northern Virginia, Arlington County, Montgomery County, to the Board of Trade, some advisory groups, also the Transportation Planning Board and the Region Forward Coalition, and our own employees. So we've really gotten a good start on getting out there and presenting the material and getting conversation rolling. Second, on those that we've scheduled just this week, we've scheduled the Fairfax County Board. We've also have meetings coming up in Prince George's planning staff. Sean Cannon is going out to the D.C. Chamber of Commerce tomorrow, and we're having the Business Improvement District representatives are coming in also this month. Yet to come, we had a national election that provided us with a little bit of a challenge, but Regina is working to schedule a meeting with our congressional delegation and also representatives of the FTA and GSA. We also have some local and state government meetings that we are working on also. So Regina's and her team are working to finalize those. Sham is working at the planning staff level to get to the various groups and talking to them. On the regional partners, I have a meeting with the Board of Trade next week. We've also, Richard has been to the federal city council meeting there. We have follow-up on that. We're also continuing with the Urban Land Institute and planning group, economics groups. We'll have a meeting with our own labor leadership. And we've also, I should mention, gotten a start on advisory groups. Andrew Burnside has talked to the accessibility group. We have yet to schedule the RAC. So in general, I just want to assure you that we are well underway on having conversations. And if I could go through a little bit of what we're hearing. And as I mentioned, some of you have participated, and I want to thank you for that in those meetings, and you may have some things you'd like to add. I would say overwhelmingly what we're hearing is keep going, that you, the rebuilding program is very, very important. Metro Forward is really key. And what is really important for the region is predictability and reliability. And the fact, and that people need to have a sense that Metro is there for them and can be counted on. So if there was any one big umbrella theme, it's keep moving forward on that. Next would be address core capacity issues and in congestion for today, but also make what we have work better for tomorrow. Eight-car trains comes up all the time, making sure that we have more frequency, more cars, just more trains. But also I would say that as a compliment, we're hearing a lot about that we are not taking advantage of the potential of bus, that we've started making progress on improving our bus service, certainly. We have new buses, we have better bus program, but there's more that the region, not just Metro, the region working together can do to move more people, not just on the rail, but on the bus side. connect the rail lines, maybe not so much about pedestrian tunnels as much as creating and connecting and providing some of those links that we've previously talked to. And again, it's about maximizing what we have, making it work better. And station capacity. And some of the suggestions with respect to dealing with congestion in the stations may be simple as running more reliable service and more frequent service will move people in and out of the station faster and keep the flow going. Then there's the vertical access issues related to providing more station entrances and also escalators and elevators, predictability, reliability of those as well. Accessibility issues that we've heard about, and it's more about thinking not just about Metro but the entire trip for the accessibility community. Somebody gets out of a station, that's not the end of the lines. Oftentimes they, you know, need to get all the way across the parking lot, if you will, into another building, but it's just trying to think about the whole trip for them. And momentum is important, generally an understanding about the economics that are at stake for the region in addressing our challenges, the metro challenges, transit system challenges. We've talked, obviously, you know, in our storyboard, we've talked about the numbers, and probably that has been educational. Because there's an understanding about the economy, link to the economy, maybe not to the extent that it is. The funding challenge comes up. Everyone, you know, recognizes that these are big issues that we need to take on as a region, not one solution, not necessarily one particular solution or one particular approach has been put forth per se, but at least that there is conversation about that challenge, that the need that we need to be talking about that. And that the region needs a transit planner, that we need to make linkages for customers and for travelers, that from their perspective, it doesn't matter whether Arlington County is providing a bus service or a streetcar service, if you will, but how does all of that link to when someone gets to the end of the line and gets on the metro service? So those are things that we've heard, that in the end that we need an integrator, and they see that Metro could play that role as the integrator planner. On the mind mixer, on the next page, some of what we've heard is just slightly different, but it has synced up. We've had over 4,000 visits to the site to date, quite an active conversation going on there. Safety from a customer perspective is about reliability and relieving congestion on the trains, on the platforms, on the buses, a better sense of safety that way, and also continuing to rebuild Metro. The same kind of core capacity issues. Also, I would mention that fare gates are, you know, focus on fare gates, moving people in and out, kind of that transaction time has also surfaced as an issue that could be helpful. More information, and this continues the theme that we hear in our focus group work, that we hear that as soon as we get another avenue out, there's just more pressure to find yet another tool. So I really want to give a shout out to Lynn Bowersox and her team, and also Rob Troop's organization. Some of you have may noticed our signs, that we now have the signs that are up in front of the kiosks. They have the clock on them today and a Metro Forward sign, and we will soon be having also real-time information on the trains, so outside of kiosk, which was in direct response to what customers have said they wanted. Also, at a customer level, they're talking, too, about connecting services, not just Metro, but seeing the region as a whole transit system. So they have voiced concerns about that too, and support for a long-term funding source. And of course, I also have to say, and for Metro to continue its pressure on expense reduction and efficiency. So those two together.
Mr. Chairman, should I stop there? Are there any thoughts that anybody has that they might like to add to the input, or does that sound
any
consistent?
Any questions, comments at this point?
Consistent. Okay. All right. So just today, I'd like to just segue a little bit to sort of the broader outreach that we are embarking on now. Just today, some of you may have seen this ad in the Express, and it will be appearing in multiple papers in the neighborhoods where we are taking advantage of that sort of suburban network, local newspaper network. It will also be in foreign language papers, but it's just simply asking people, what is your idea? What's your big idea? So anyone, you don't have to be digitally and online or inclined at all. You just have to take a old-fashioned pen or pencil and give us your idea and put a stamp on it and mail it to us. So we're really trying to reach out to give people an opportunity just to give us their opinions. So that started today, and it will run through January. We have a series of advertising that will run through January. Next, on other avenues of getting more input, at the last week in November, we will post an online survey. That has proved to be popular in the past, where people are able to voice their opinion about options. But we will also take portions of those questions that we're going to post online and do we will have people located at key bus stops, and they will be giving out literally paper surveys to individuals to voice their opinions. And they'll have an opportunity to mail those back in or even to give them to us on site. And they will be in Spanish and in English. We've been doing monthly mailings out or email letters to our Smart Trip database, which is about 500,000 people. We've also been doing that to our stakeholder list, which, as you know, we've built over time through Metro Forward. It's probably close to about 2,500 people on those lists. We've worked in conjunction also with our Civil Rights Office. They partner with about 130 organizations in the region, so we're really reaching out to non-English speakers, too. We also have our brochure in Spanish up, and, of course, our website's in multiple languages. And we soon, in December, will also have old-fashioned bus cards, which will be placed in the buses, encouraging input. So we have two big forums coming up in December, or multiple forums. You might recall that I talked in previously about the forums where we'll have a conversation, really, of a couple of hours, where we will talk with people about the issues, and they'll have an opportunity to literally vote. And it's called a deliberative forum. It's been used for planning issues in the region. For instance, the Walter Reed reuse plan was one of those things that they used. At the Transportation Planning Board has used this technique. We'll have one forum in each of the jurisdictions, as well as a forum that will be reserved for Spanish speakers. And then on December 14th, we are partnering with the Washington Post. They have had a success with these forums that they offer where they're bringing in thought leaders. And we're hoping for a very thoughtful conversation about the issues that we have and also some solutions that they might suggest. I know we've talked to some of you about recommending speakers or ideas for speakers that you might have. It's moderated by Post editor Mary Jordan. Approximately 150 to 200 people are invited in to actually observe it and participate and ask questions. But then it is also streamed live, and they have an audience of well over 2 million people. So I think that will be a very productive, more of a thoughtful conversation that we'll have. So on the next steps, November, we're continuing our outreach. As I mentioned, we're, moving forward with scheduling more and reaching out to even more people. I also pointed out the advertising start, and we'll have our online survey and so on. In November and December, Sham is continuing to work with the planning team on developing the actual plan that you will see in January. So even as we are gathering input, that is underway. And, of course, we'll have the major forums in December and a lot of the public input. And then we plan to be back to you in January with draft for your review.
Any questions? Yes, indeed. Ms. Bowser. Ms. Bowser.
Thank you. I just, about the Washington Post forum, what is the exact format and the role of the board in that forum?
So the format is generally either a panel discussion, or sometimes they'll break up it into two different panels. And the board is encouraged to all be there. And usually what happens is a representative from our organization will set the stage, and then there will be thought leaders brought in. So someone maybe perhaps from the academic side, somebody representing business community, someone representing people that have been thinking and talking about this topic for a long time. So it's really an opportunity to get outside thinking into it. And Chair Hudgens is actually going to be the person who's going to sort of convene it, kick it off. So, would really encourage the board members to be there. There's also an opportunity for Q&A, and so they do it sort of in an open kind of way.
Okay, so if there is a panel, would the chairman of the board represent the board on the panel?
Yes,
uh-huh. Would Rich Sorrells be on the panel? Who's going to be on the panel?
No, the panel will be people. We have provided speakers, suggested speakers, but together the Post generally does the ultimate invitation for the speaker.
Okay, so we don't know exactly.
No, but we're in conversation
okay.
with them about that. And as I mentioned, Chair Hudgens will convene it and sort of set the stage for the conversation.
Okay, thank
okay?
you.
Okay, and if so certainly, if you have suggestions, can you give them to me?
Yeah, Mr. Giancole. That was a good question by Board Member Bowser. The concern I have is the board role more of a listening role, or are we participating? And by participating, I mean, are we really going to be articulating our draft strategic plan, as an example, in the future? So, I mean, give us some more format for this or context.
Yes, Chair Hudgens will set the context for the board role and kind of the goals, the mission, the vision, what we're doing, what we're all about. This is our turn to listen to thought leaders in the region. So is that helpful?
Yeah. I think what this is intended to be is to expand what we've been doing in a smaller scale and simply using the forum opportunity. The staff, and along with myself, have been identifying, and I think they've been talking to other folks. I think the board wants to have the opportunity to hear from around the region what others are saying and thinking and seeing where we are. That's what we've been doing as we've gone out to jurisdictions and other stakeholders, and I think it's just a wide forum, and I think we'd encourage if you have anyone that you think that might be someone to be in this room so that we can hear from them. I think we've started to try and identify some folks that have those roles that we would all know that serve in our region. So it was an opportunity to have another method of reaching out as we've gone to the jurisdictions and other stakeholders and hearing.
Yes.
And it's a listening as we've done there. We present our forum, our strategic planning process and where we've been and how we're moving forward. And now what do you all think about that? And what do you hear?
Exactly. It's really an opportunity to elevate the conversation to a much wider audience. And those that think about Metro and the topic of transit in a different way than maybe we do. It really is another good opportunity to listen.
Mr. Bolger.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I went to the Post event last year with Rich and a few of the staff, and they had this voting consultant from Portland, Oregon. We all got these devices to vote on a myriad of things. Will that process, if you know, we're going to will happen again on major metropolitan issues, metro issues?
I don't think they decided that yet.
I think that's very, very important to find out, because the voting last year was on national transportation issues and taxes and so forth and so on. The results were remarkable,
okay,
as I remember them.
Yeah.
Remarkably bad.
Oh. as we work with them and we develop it, we'll just continue to provide you with more information so you have a better idea of what will be taking place. So let me just say that. I'll keep giving you updates on how that's developing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do like the idea of the American Idol voting. Anyway, I had a question about the forums that will be held between December 1st and 7th. I assume they're invitation only. Is that correct? And how do you select the participants? Who will be in the room? And
we're going to be working with the organization. We're actually going to go out and recruit. And we're going to ensure that it's about a mix of 70% of those that would be representing our customer base, 30% of people who are not our customers, and within the 70 and 35% will be from the accessibility community as well. So we're trying to get a balance of people who are with us today, but also make sure we have a voice of those who aren't on us today.
Mr. Downing?
Yeah. Moving from the post forum, I think we understand better our role will be to listen attentively and network with people. But as we move through December and January, what will you be doing to provide us rich analysis of what we've heard, not just headlines, but sort of in-depth? I don't view the mind mixer as a plebiscite, but it would be useful to know how intense were the views in one subject versus another. So I'm just hopeful that over the next 6 to 8 weeks we'll see a pretty good analysis of what we've heard.
Ms. Hines.
Thanks, Mr. Barnes. You know, it occurs to me, too, that all of this is fabulous, but the other context for both Virginia and Maryland is that after the first of the year we will have our General Assemblies sitting. You know, my approach has sort of been a do-no-harm approach as I've been talking to our legislators, you know, keep the $50 million match in place. But I guess what I'm wondering for you to think about, and we should probably crank this into our schedule moving forward, is are there any consistent messages that we need to give across Maryland and Virginia in the General Assemblies about particular things that we are concerned about that might come to their attention? Because it's easy for us jurisdictional people to take it back and have it in our local packages and talk to our legislators, and I assume those of us who have that access do that. But for an organization as large and complex with as many funders as this one is, I think having a strategic way that we approach that each year is probably really important. And typically, you know, we're adopting in the December timeframe our package. And I don't know, Maryland legislature's a little later, so there may be more wiggle there, but just something to put on our radar screen.
Other questions or comments on this process, which is extremely important and which will come to a head over the next couple of months? If not, we'll move to well, let me just go back. Our ever-attentive board secretary has noted that we didn't have a quorum here when we adopted the minutes of our last meeting, although my memory of Robert's rules is that you have a quorum unless somebody notices the absence of a quorum. And nobody did, but our secretary did. So let's have another motion on adopting the minutes.
So moved.
And we'll have a second. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The minutes are hereby appropriately, legally approved.
What is the quorum for the committee?
One member from each jurisdiction, and we didn't have one member.
Well, that's the whole committee.
We didn't have one member from every jurisdiction. Well, we didn't even have an alternate, you know, alternate member from each jurisdiction. So we, any event, either way, we're okay, because I think we were all right anyway under Robert's rules. The last item on the agenda is to inform the committee and the board that we have received recommendations from the law firm that was retained as a consultant to give us recommendations with respect to possible changes in our procedures and with respect to the Code of Ethics bylaws. And we have received that, and we obviously have other recommendations that have been made over the last couple of years, and many changes have been adopted. The process for adopting changes is traditionally that they are adopted in February. So my suggestion as chairman of the committee would be that all members of the committee and the board review the recommendations that we have received and any other recommendations that you may be aware of or any thoughts you may have without having been recommended by somebody else, and that in February we will, in this committee, consider any suggested recommendations that any member may have, and that they would be then presented to the board. Any that are recommended by the committee would then be presented to the board for consideration in February. With that, I would ask if there are any questions or comments about this process. Ms. Hines, I know you have one because we talked about it yesterday.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Barnes. I actually have several comments. One is that this consultant has broken this really into two bits here. The first part has to do with the reports that were done in 2010 about the board governance, which, as most of us remember, we took greatly to heart. We discussed at extensive length, and we made a series of concerted decisions about how we wanted to respond collectively on behalf of the region on these issues related to governance. I will say for myself that I was dismayed that some of these were repeated, because, in fact, the board spent a lot of time talking about them, and a number of the things that are raised are compact issues, which the board made, a studied decision not to pursue compact changes in the context in which we were, and I actually don't think that there's anything that's happened in the ensuing time that leads me to think compact changes around these particular issues are value added. So let me just say that. I can't even say I appreciate them being this being resurfaced. It is what it is. But I would say for the most part, the board spent an incredible amount of time discussing them. And so I am tending to discount that part because we have recently been through it. On the other hand, we were interested when we launched this investigation in knowing from an outside perspective whether our code of ethics was in the keeping of best practice. Let me just say it that way. We spent a lot of time revising the code of ethics in 2011, and our legal staff did an amazing job of analysis of the various ethics codes that we, from our jurisdictions, are somewhat governed by, and trying to put a blend on the table that they felt would serve us well. And so the thing I would like to request before we come back to this, Mr. Barnes, is that on the set of recommendations related to the Code of Ethics, that our legal shop, again, look at these in the context of the analysis that they already did and help us to understand whether, in fact, they've pointed out some things that really would, that the board really should take a hard look at. Some of this is cleaning up. The Code of Ethics is complicated. It's interrelated. We struggled with some parts of that. And there are things in here that I think absolutely we probably they'll just make it cleaner and more understandable. There's some others where I think there's some judgment going to be called for, but we should have the issues before us and understand them. So if our legal staff could do that, I think that would really help the board's conversation around those particular issues.
Let me just understand. It sounds like a good idea. What is it you're asking our general counsel and her staff to do to take these recommendations and give us their perspective on how they fit in with what we did previously, or what is it exactly you're looking for?
Well, to get to where we got with the adopted Code of Ethics, one of the things we asked them to do was to analyze the Virginia Code of Ethics, the Maryland Code of Ethics, D.C., and the feds, and to help us understand where they aligned and where they were different. And then we worked our way through. I would like them to take these recommendations and review them in the light of that analysis they did of the existing codes.
That's what I thought we talked about yesterday.
Yes,
I'm sorry if I wasn't clear. But I wanted Ms. O'Keefe to have a good understanding of what it is the committee is asking her to undertake. Is there further comment on that point? If not, we'll ask General Counsel if you can spend a little time over the next month or so looking at that.
After my first read, I think most of the recommendations are, as Mrs. Hines has said, tweaks that certainly the board might consider. There are a couple of major issues, major recommendations that will certainly require some, as Mrs. Hines said, studied consideration. So I'd be happy to come back and provide that analysis.
Thank you. Ms. Porter.
If we do plan on taking anything up at the board level in February, I think we're going to need more detailed information by January in order to make a decision. I don't think where we are now we're prepared to look at something and say yes or no. So I would think that in addition to the analysis, I would like to see what our ethics code would look like if some of these changes were made. And I don't know if that's beyond what you were talking about doing or not.
That's a good suggestion.
So, Mr. Barnes, sorry, yes. Perhaps we could aim for at least a brief discussion in January, followed by a discussion in February. My experience is these things do take a little bit of chewing on, and if we could have two opportunities, you know, if we get through it in January and we're all happy, then we just hold it for the February board meeting. We don't need to spend the second meeting. Because I think it would be optimal.
That's a good suggestion. That still gives us time, every member time, to review these and think about whether some of these changes are ones you want to initiate.
And perhaps then if people have other either bylaw, code of ethics, or procedure changes that they think the board should consider, they could be sure to get them to our committee no later than maybe the 1st of January so they can get put together and circulated or something in advance of that meeting.
Good. I would think that would be very helpful. By the end of the year, so you got about 6 weeks to consider these and this raises a point. I'm going to miss our meeting on December 5th, I guess it is, because for the last 10 or 12 years, I have gone every year to a two-day conference on best practices in governance because of a role I play as chair of a governance committee elsewhere. I've been going to this for 10 or 12 years, and this year it happens to be at that time. So I will be off considering possible amendments to our governance while you all are meeting here. This will be at no cost to WMATA, by the way, my attendance at that conference. Any other questions or comments about this, Mr. Downey?
Yeah, I think the approach would be a good one. If we can take the bylaw and ethics code component of this report and really see what the language would be to implement those so that we can decide, do we think that's a good idea, do we not? I first blush say a lot of it will be useful in clarifying where we've been. There are a couple of things in there I really would disagree with. I also share Ms. Hines' view that the front-end part of the report about governance was pretty gratuitous. We made, I think, a good decision not to take up those matters that are the matters of the legislature and others. The fact that they point out that on each of these issues there have been points of view that are very disparate that were raised by others, I'm not sure what they add by coming in on one or another. I am concerned with the kind of overarching position they do take that says there is a spectrum of board behavior between public agency and corporate board, and that they would argue for moving in the direction of the corporate board. I think public agencies who have moved in that direction have lost their way. I won't mention one in this region. I will mention one in my former home, front page in the New York Times yesterday, the Long Island Power Authority, which was created because the previous utility was not responsive, held a meeting 2 days before the advent of the storm, and spent 29 seconds talking about preparedness for storm activities. They're now subject to a large investigation by a Moreland Act commission who will probably be abolished. But I think there's a different set of responsibilities for an agency that is making public policy decisions and offering, in effect, a monopoly service where we have the obligation to meet both the public responsibility and the corporate. And I would certainly move on the far side of that needle, and it would influence a lot of the decisions that might be made, not by us but by others. But I think we should say that's the direction we'd like to see people perceive us.
Mr. Downs?
I want to second Mr. Downey's description of the first part of the report as being gratuitous. I don't want to sound like procedural nitpicker, but the board established a working group to manage this review and investigation, and including the relationship with the law firm and the specific charge they gave, and in effect issued the work orders for this work. I think one of the necessary steps here is to have the working group make a recommendation to the governance committee about the adequacy and the fullness of this report in meeting the charge that they set out for the law firm. I was kind of stunned to see that we started off with an ethics investigation about a relatively small real estate deal and wound up with governance recommendations of, like, potentially eliminating elected officials from the governing board and elimination of alternates. I think there is a responsibility for, I'm sorry, Alvin is not here today, but for the working group itself that the board established to have some ownership and review of this product back to the governance committee. The governance committee did not oversee this particular contract. The working group did, and as a work product, I think it needs some final review by the working group.
Well, as a member of the working group, let me just comment. The law firm was requested to present its recommendations to the governance committee, and I don't know that. I'm just trying to think, Tom, of what we achieved by having the working group meet again and review these recommendations. We can all review them, and we're going to see whether we agree or disagree, each of us, whether we're a member of the governance committee or not. I mean, we could talk with the chair of the working group, as you mentioned. Alvin isn't here right now, but the charge was to present the instruction to the law firm was to present their recommendations to the governance committee. And they've done that, and we haven't. And I think this committee and the board can review them. I'm just trying to think what we achieved by having more meetings of the working group. It's sort of disbanded now, and maybe I'm not fully appreciating your thought behind why the working group needs to convene to review these in advance of the Governance Committee considering any suggestions that members of the committee or other board members may have to adopt any of these recommendations or other recommendations that we may have.
In effect, the working committee served as the contract manager. We're accepting a work product. If we accept the report, we're acting, in effect, as the contract managers for this contract about the adequacy and the scope and the framing of the work itself. Not the policy recommendations. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a contract for a specific work product that was, in effect, created by board direction with board oversight and acting as the contract manager, in effect, for this contract. And I think in that vein, I think the board needs to carry out its responsibility about the adequacy of the work product and the contract and fulfillment of this contract. And make a recommendation about that. I'm not suggesting that there be a working group review of the recommendations themselves. I think that's governance, because those are legitimately governance issues. But I do think that there has to be some degree of final review and acceptance of the product as it met the original intent.
Well, that process, I think, is underway. The chair is well aware of that. I know the chair has been working with Mr. Nichols.
I'm sorry that Alan is not here, but I think if from not speaking from the working groups, that communication and the role of procurement has been followed through, and that's where that really is the evaluation of the product. How it does require us to look at the product, but I think the actions that were called for in the obtaining the services is being reviewed through that instrument, which it really is the authority's instrument. But Alvin has been involved in that, so our communication that we shared with you should see that part.
Will there be a report back through governance about that?
Yes, there will be.
Issue.
Ms. Hyde?
Mr. Chairman, I think that, this was a very unusual situation, something that the authority had never done before well, where the board, there was an allegation, the board stepped in and hired outside counsel to investigate a former member, and because of the involvement of many people in the agency, it was done in a particular way. I do think that there are some really important lessons learned about in these kinds of situations, how procurement is managed, how contracts are managed, what the role of the board is. And I would say to you, knowing our procedures and our bylaws very well, that they're fairly silent on this issue. And so I think that the important thing here is that we get to what would be better practice should we have to do it again. And in the context of our earlier conversation, which is let's get those things we've discovered on the table so we can deal with them as we approach February and our reorganization, I think that's what's most important to do. I do think some of the discomfort is like who's really deciding, and so, Kathy, I really appreciate knowing that you are involved with Mr. Nichols. It's also the kind of thing that the executive committee could be pulled into, and that would give us somebody from every, signatory who is then in the loop and has a chance to ask each set of any questions that come from any of our jurisdictions or the groups we represent. So I don't think we should get hung up on how it's, what we need to do is focus on the fact that we potentially have a hole in our procedures that we need to fill. And we should learn from this experience and figure out how to do that when we reorganize in February. So that those are kind of this is just a very unusual situation.
Ms. Bowser?
Thank you. And I tend to agree with Ms. Hines' comments that we should figure out what's most appropriate to act in these situations moving forward. But having said that, I do think that I'm very interested to have placed in the public record the authority under which this review was conducted. We specifically set out, and I think we can do that easily by just referring to the resolution that the board approved for the investigation to begin. And that will kind of set out the scope that under which this contractor should be paid and all of that reviewed. So I don't know that we've had a public discussion about that, but I do think it's important, and I would like included what that resolution said and what was authorized in that resolution. And I think your suggestion that the executive committee undertake that discussion is very appropriate, but I do think it should be made in part of the record.
If there's no objection, we'll ask the secretary to include that resolution in the minutes of this meeting. Hearing no objection, so ordered. Any further discussion of this matter?
Mr. Barnes.
Ms. Hines.
I appreciate Ms. Bowser's pointing to the board's resolution. I do think, though, that the scope of work that the contractor bid on is also at play here, because as a person who was substituting in the audits committee as we were discussing the scope of work, this issue of looking at our existing code and giving us a code of ethics and giving us recommendations was, I believe, discussed by the committee and was included in the scope of work or the RFP that went out on the street that people bid on. So, I don't know, and I think this is partly to your point, I don't know whether that was then included in the board's resolution or not, but I think we do have to acknowledge the scope of work as, you know, as approved by the, again, this may be part of those, you know, gaps that we need to fill in here as we move forward, but as someone who sat in that discussion, I can tell you there was general agreement that we needed to include the review of the Code of Ethics in light of what they found.
Mr. Chairman, I think this discussion has been helpful, and I think as started out in terms of where we go with this set of recommendations, I think it's appropriate that we come back either at the board or at the next meeting of beginning that with a description of that process so everyone can be comfortable and have those discussions. And I think it would respond to all aspects of it, the product itself, as well as the process that it has gone through in the procurement process. And that would be reference to what the board had directed.
Mr. Downs.
Perhaps if I didn't explain my initial suggestion the right way. The reason I made the suggestion about the review by the working group was to get clarity about that part of this process that led to both the expansion of the charge, the work effort, and whether or not this report complied with that expanded charge, because that expanded charge was not actually shared with the full board. It was part of the process of the working group working with the law firm to deliver this product. I still think that it is appropriate to have the working group be part of that process because only they know what that discussion was. It was not enrolled in a resolution of the full board.
Mr. Bolger, did you have a comment? Ms. Bowser.
Slightly on a different point, Mr. Barnes, I wanted to direct this to you, and I've heard this question raised by members of the committee that I chair on real estate and planning, how the board will move forward in the discussion of the real estate and planning procedures. So I don't know if you have given some thought to that from the governance perspective. I think we might also consider it in the Real Estate and Planning Committee. And one possible next step would also be to ask our legal team to review the procedures, refresh the committee on the existing procedures, but also undertake a review of any tweaks that may be needed there. And I just wanted to throw that out at this committee.
That's a very good suggestion to ask the legal counsel to incorporate that into the work we were already tasking her and her team to do. And I note by her nodding that she's prepared to undertake that. My assumption has been that this when we consider any changes next year, we're open to recommendations from members of the board with respect to any of our processes, not just limiting it to one document, but that any members of the committee or the board who have suggestions for ways we can improve the way we do our work should bring those forward. And it's been suggested we bring them forward before the end of the year. So we have about 6 weeks for each of us to look at all these matters, think about what changes we would like to see made in the way the board and the committees function, and then we'll discuss those in January and have final action by the board in February on any such changes.
Sure.
Mr. Downey.
Yeah, following up on Ms. Bowser, I think the planning and real estate set of issues is a clear vulnerability and deserves close attention. I wouldn't want to see us create one set of procedures reflecting one part of our activity and another. These are all, to me, ethics code and bylaw issues that address the entire board and its behavior, and we should treat it. But there are certain ways in which that business is done that deserve a good look as to how they would fit with what we also think is a viable code of ethics.
Other comments on this matter? Ms. Hampshire Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mrs. Bowser, for raising this issue. It is something we discussed. The only thing I want to say, I think it is important that we do it, and I think it is related that we collect all lessons learned and make the appropriate adjustments. But as we do this, particularly on real estate, I also hope that we are mindful that we are not piling on and creating a process that diminishes our ability to move forward with development, because we do want development, so I think it's a balance. The second comment I want to make, just a clarification, again, following up on Mr. Downs' comment about the working group setting the parameters or the statement of work. I, too, served on that special committee, but as I understand it, it was a charge to the Audit and Legal Committee who delineated the expectations and requirements for the review. And subsequently, when it was determined that there were potential conflicts or appearances of conflicts, the group was supplemented to include and then become a working group for purposes of the review. So it's not that I want to complicate it further, but I think it's important that we have clarity in terms of who articulated or the body that articulated and authorized the work to be done. Thanks.
That's correct. It was the chair of the Audits and Investigations Committee who oversaw the process and invited some others of us to join in because some members of the board had recused themselves because they had been on the board at the time of the matters that were under investigation. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, the committee will stand adjourned.